idea from his mind. It'll take months, maybe years, before I find Pauline and the kids. Falker won't have that kind of patience. He's looking for prey. He wants to feed himself and his crew. He can't wait that long. His own crew would slit his throat first. Still, Victor shut down the main engine and used the coal gas maneuvering jets to shift Pleiades away from the outbound vector it had been following. He kicked Pleiades into a trajectory that climbed well above his original course. Most ships travel close to the ecliptic. That's where the asteroids are. He might not think of looking up. Go silent again. Don't leave a trail for him to follow, he told himself. Don't take any chances. Once he had convinced himself that he had lost Vogeltot, he called up the navigation program and restudied his options. I've got to stay farther away from the Ceres sector, he realized. Parasites like Falker must be combing the region, looking for derelicts to scavenge. But that means I'll have to cover a wider arc to have any hope of intercepting Pauline and the kids. He decided to cruise silently for at least 3 days before turning on the search radar. Then he decided to make it a week. He didn't want to take any chances of giving Valker or anyone else a signal they could home in on. Vogeltot's bridge was a strange assortment of equipment, most of it taken from vessels that Valker and his crew had seized and retrofitted into the old bucket. Valker himself sat in a command chair that had once belonged to Admiral Gormley, the victim of a bloody ambush during the war. Falker was a big man, almost 2 meters tall, broad in the shoulders, deep in the chest. He was almost always smiling, a bright, devil-may-care smile that showed lots of teeth. While another man might show tension, even fear in a dangerous situation, Falker smiled and fought his way through. During the war, he'd been a mercenary, first with Astro Corporation, then with Humphrey's Space Systems. When the shooting stopped, most mercenaries were at a loss. For years, there had been plenty of work for them, and good pay. Not that they fought all the time. Much of their work involved building bases or scouting through the cold emptiness of the belt, looking for prey. They seldom engaged in battle against other mercenaries, no percentage in that. Instead, they swooped down on hapless cargo ships and smelters like hawks going after pigeons. The official end of the war finished that, for the most part. Some mercenaries became outlaws, pirates, still attacking peaceful vessels, but they soon learned that no one would buy the cargoes they captured. Big George Ambrose and the other rock rats, busily building their new habitat at Ceres, had no time or money to hire a police force to go after the pirates. They simply saw to it that no one in the belt bought stolen cargo. The pirates soon realized there was little profit in their piracies, and there was always the risk that Big George's people would execute you without delay. Falker was smarter than that. When the Second Asteroid War broke out, he had just graduated from the University of Pisa with a double degree in economics and marketing. He had been a star on the international soccer team he himself had helped to organize. His plan was to spend 3 years, perhaps as much as 5, in the belt, working as a prospector, locating asteroids rich in metals and minerals, claiming them as an independent corporation, and then selling them to the highest bidder. The asteroid war made such ventures far too hazardous. Falker saw that he either joined one of the major corporations or he went back to Earth empty-handed, or got himself killed. So he became a mercenary, until the war abruptly ended. While most of the mercenaries found themselves out of work and flooded back to the Earth-Moon region to look for jobs, Falker realized that there was an economic niche available in the belt. Salvage. There were plenty of vessels abandoned by their crews drifting through the belt, there for the taking. He could claim the vessels as salvage, then sell them back to the rock rats for a handsome profit. He was a born salesman. With his rugged good looks and winning smile, he talked a banker into leasing him a small ship, Vogeltot. It wasn't difficult to round up a crew. He picked 9 men, all former mercenaries, all quite prepared to stretch the laws of salvage once they were out in the belt and away from the prying eyes of Big George and the IAA. They searched for abandoned vessels. Some were battered hulks, little more than junk. Most had equipment in them that could be scavenged, but the real money was in ships that were intact. Valker and his crewmates pounced on lonely vessels deep in the belt, killed the crew, and brought the ship back to Sirius for sale. There were always questions, raised eyebrows, lurking suspicions. Valker smiled his way through and sold the abandoned vessels to the highest bidder. There were always newcomers from Earth or the Moon with money in their accounts to invest in a new career in prospecting and mining. Now Valker sat in Admiral Gormley's old command chair and studied the data splashed on Vogeltoad's main screen. Pleiades was listed back at Ceres as stolen. Its captain and owner, Chena Madagascar, had even posted a hefty reward for the ship's return. Big George Ambrose had declared the thief, somebody named Victor Zacharias, to be an outlaw and placed a modest price on his head. Gesuto, Valker said aloud. We could take this ship and bring it back to Ceres, and we'll be heroes, no less. The other men on the bridge grinned at him. The rewards don't add up to all that much, he continued, but the goodwill could be helpful. He's no fool, though, said the man at the nav console. He sprinted away, and now he shut down his main engine. Trying to be invisible, Valker muttered. And doing a good job of it. Radar ain't picking up anything. Valker nodded absently. You're right. He's no fool. He pecked out a command to the ship's computer on the keyboard set into the armrest of his chair. Let's see what Ceres has on file about this thief. Know your customer, he said to himself. That's the first rule of marketing.
Attack ship Viking. Bridge. Everything stopped as Coop brought the cyborg and the old woman onto the bridge. The two crewmen, who were still working at repairs of the equipment Dorne had smashed, glanced at him warily, as did the officers at their consoles, two of them with spray tape covering their broken noses. Elvenza's face was drawn tight with tension. It was impossible to read any expression on the cyborg's half-metal face. Tamara, at the comm console, half-turned in her chair as Coop led them in. Yuan glared at her, a warning to keep her mouth shut. I'm the captain, he said silently to her. I'm in charge. Harbin, he began. I want... My name is no longer Doric Harbin. Please call me Dorne. Yuan grimaced. All right. Dorne. I want you to give my navigation officer the coordinates for the asteroid where the artifact is located. Elverda saw that all of them were staring openly at Dorne now. The three bridge officers, the captain, the pair of technicians, even the strapping Hawaiian. For a long moment, Dorne said nothing. The bridge was absolutely silent, except for the hum of electrical power and the whisper of air from the ventilation ducts. It will be very dangerous to go there, Dorne said at last. Yuan waved a hand impatiently. That's for me to worry about, not you. Give my nav officer the coordinates. He may have moved the asteroid to a different orbit, or even destroyed it completely. Just give the coordinates to my nav officer, Yuan insisted. Again, Dorne hesitated. Then, I want your promise that Ms. Apacheta will not be harmed. The coordinates, damn it! Yuan shouted. Now! I don't care what happens to me, but I want her to be safe. Tamara said, Do you want us to start pulling her fingernails out? Clenching his metal fist, Dorne said, The rest of this bridge will be destroyed if you try that. Some of you will die. His voice was flat, unemotional, but the others on the bridge shot uneasy glances at one another. Before anyone could reply, Yuan broke into a forced chuckle. All right, all right. I won't touch a hair of her head. Does that satisfy you? No, Dorn said calmly. I want your guarantee